Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Professional Services podcast, where we'll be discussing important topics and challenges facing members. I'm joined today with my colleague Judith Houston, and I'm Yolandi Gibbs. We're both HR business partners at the BPIF. The topic we'll be discussing is to ensure a safe and supportive work environment, and today we're diving into the crucial subject of preventing sexual harassment at work. We'll be exploring guidance from the Equality Act 2010. And practical steps employers can take to create a ha harassment-free workplace. So, just as an introduction to the subject, under the equality law, employers must take reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment of workers. The Equality Act 2010 defines sexual harassment as unwanted conduct of a sexual nature that violates someone's dignity or creates an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, or offensive environment. As of October 2024, employers have a positive legal duty to prevent sexual harassment, known as the preventative duty, under these new rules, and failure to comply can lead to legal consequences and a negative impact on workplace culture and productivity.
Thanks for that, Yolandi. Wow, that definition really is a tongue twister. But I understand that this is the legal definition under the Equality Act. The Equality Act now requires employers to take positive steps to prevent sexual harassment. And as you said, Yolandi, but it is worth noting that this includes harassment by colleagues and also third parties like customers, contractors, and suppliers. Employers must anticipate potential harassment scenarios in these situations and implement measures to prevent them.
So, what are the consequences of a company not complying with the legislation, Jude?
Well, apart from the negative impact on workplace culture and productivity that you've mentioned, the Equality and Human Rights Commission may enforce a standalone breach of duty as an unlawful act under its existing enforcement powers. But importantly, where a tribunal finds in a sexual harassment claim that sexual harassment has in fact occurred to any extent, and that the employer has breached its duty, they will have the power to increase any tribunal compensation awarded by up to 25%. But this shouldn't just be about meeting legal requirements and complying with the new preventative duty that's now in place. Preventing sexual harassment has many benefits. It can build a positive culture where everyone feels valued and respected. Somewhere employees feel safe, leading to increased productivity, employee retention, and the ability to attract new talent.
Well, thanks for that, Jude. So, how does a company go about creating an environment free of any sexual harassment?
That's a good question. Let's look at what things a company can put in place that would help prevent any such incidents occurring. First thing any company should consider and look to develop is an anti-harassment policy, or review any current policies that might be in place to ensure that they are still fit for purpose.
So, what elements should be included in a comprehensive anti-harassment policy?
Well, the policy should clearly define sexual harassment, so provide clear examples and outline the procedures for reporting and addressing complaints. It should also address that third-party harassment and include a commitment to regularly review and update. A good policy will specify who is protected, state that sexual harassment will not be tolerated and is, in fact, unlawful, state that harassment or victimisation may lead to disciplinary action, and this could be up to and including dismissal. It should clearly give examples such as abuse of power over a more junior colleague. These are the things that will be taken into account when deciding what disciplinary action may be appropriate. Is there anything else you can think of, Yolandi?
So, the section that addresses third-party harassment should explain clearly that the law requires employers to take reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment by third parties, and workers are encouraged to report it. And what steps will be taken to prevent it? As well as what steps will be taken to remedy any complaint and prevent it from happening again? So, for example, warning a customer about their behaviour, banning a customer, reporting any criminal acts to the police, or sharing information with other branches of the business. So, Jude, how do you think such a policy should be communicated?
Yes, engaging with staff will be crucial in the success of the implementation of a policy and indeed any other measures that are undertaken. Employers will need to be aware of how to report harassment and clear on the consequences of such behaviour. Therefore, any policy will need to be clearly communicated, distributed, and easily accessible to all to encourage a culture of openness and support. This communication can be done using all the usual avenues available to the company, like team meetings, emails, and any other form of notification that they would normally rely on.
Okay, thank you, Jude. So, how can employers effectively engage their staff to create a culture of openness and support?
Well, you could conduct regular one-to-ones, put them in place if not already there. Maybe run staff surveys, whether this is anonymous or not. And when employees leave the business, consider carrying out exit interviews and maybe something like a suggestion box. Importantly, have an open door policy. You should use these tools to ensure you understand where any potential issues lie and whether the steps you are taking are working efficiently and sufficient for the company.
So, are there any other steps a company can do to help comply with the preventative duty?
Yes, there is, Yolandi. What will be essential for a company going forward will be to conduct a risk assessment to help identify factors that might increase the likelihood of sexual harassment occurring and the steps needed to mitigate them. Consider factors that could contribute to a hostile environment.
So, what are some specific risk factors employers should look out for and consider when conducting a risk assessment?
Okay, well, higher risk factors that might increase the likelihood of instances happening are things like where the power imbalances within your company might be. Is there a lack of diversity perhaps in your workforce? Do any of your staff have customer-facing duties? Or are staff expected to attend external events or maybe even socialise together outside of work? Do staff engage in crude or disrespectful behaviour at work that maybe they consider to be okay? Once the risk assessment has been done and risks identified, thought can be given as to what measures are needed and should be put in place.
So, what sort of measures do you mean?
Well, other than the policy and risk assessments that we referred to, a necessary measure will obviously be to have a mechanism of people being able to report such incidents. If a company does not have a robust reporting mechanism, then employees may not feel confident in raising such issues for fear of further repercussions if not handled correctly.
So what you're saying, implementing a reporting system that is well communicated will be crucial then?
Yes. Consideration needs to be given as to how complaints will be made. For example, whether it should be anonymous, either online, telephone-based, but something that allows workers to raise concerns safely.
So is it better for the reporting system that is in place to be anonymous?
Well, there are benefits of having a reporting system that also allows for issues to be raised anonymously. It can obviously make people feel safer and more confident to report their concerns without fear of consequences, thereby encouraging them to do so. It protects the identity of those who come forward, protecting vulnerable employees, and can help companies uncover important information that might otherwise go unnoticed or unreported.
So, are you saying that anonymous systems are preferred?
Not necessarily. Despite the apparent advantages, companies do need to be mindful of potential pitfalls and challenges that having such a process anonymous, it can present. So, for example, if you have protecting a whistleblower and having it anonymous, this could pose challenges during a case investigation, particularly where they're more complicated. Also, as with any whistleblowing tool, there is the potential for abuse of the system. And it can be exploited by perhaps people lodging false or malicious complaints. Either way, whatever procedure is implemented needs to be right for the company.
So, what should an employee who witnessed an incident of sexual harassment do?
In the first instance, they should refer to the company policy that hopefully has been put in place and following the reporting procedure that's detailed therein. If there is any reason why they're uncomfortable with that procedure or can't feel they can apply it, then they should seek guidance from the HR department or their line manager. Where a colleague witnesses any form of harassment, it is crucial that they act on it.
Okay, thank you, Jo. So, what steps should employees take if they receive a complaint?
Well, it's important to take account of how the individual themselves would like it to be managed, and so discussing that with them. Where appropriate, then, and necessary, ensure that a fair and thorough investigation is carried out. It is important throughout the process that the company, of course, respects the confidentiality of all parties. They should protect the complainant from ongoing harassment or being victimised during any investigation or complaint. And if a worker makes a complaint of harassment that maybe is a criminal offence, you should speak to the individual about whether they want to report the matter to the police. And if so, obviously support them through that process. Always communicate the outcome of the complaint and outline any appeals process to the complainant in a timely manner.
So, are there any other recommended preventative steps that could be taken?
Yeah, I think conducting focused training sessions is going to be essential going forward for companies, and this should be actually done for all staff, including managers and senior leaders. It's actually an easy win for companies to be able to demonstrate that they've complied with their duty if they do such training. They just need to ensure that it's actually captured and recorded that it's been done.
Okay, so what could be covered in a training session?
I would suggest everyone needs to be trained on what sexual harassment in the workplace looks like, what's considered to be unacceptable behaviour, what to do if they experience or witness it, and importantly, how to handle any complaints of harassment that they are presented with. Remember, in industries where third-party harassment from customers or others is more likely, workers should also be trained on how to address these specific issues.
So, how often should employers conduct these training sessions?
Well, you should continually review the effectiveness of any training that is provided, but offer refresher sessions regularly for existing employees, as well as ensuring that it is completed at the induction stage for all new staff.
Okay, thank you. So, what happens if somebody is sexually harassed while at work but not by an employee? So, for example, a customer, a contractor, or a supplier.
Yes, so this is the harassment by third parties that we've mentioned, such as the categories of people that you listed there. It also does come under the preventative duty that is now required and should be treated just as seriously as harassment by colleagues. Employers should also take steps to prevent this type of harassment, including maybe putting in a reporting mechanism, that might be slightly different to the internal process. And assessing high-risk workplace areas where staff, for example, could be left alone with customers. Once that's done, they should ensure that any incidents that are reported are appropriately addressed. And that could be some of the things that you mentioned at the earlier in the discussion, that warning a customer about their behaviour, banning a particular customer, possibly reporting incidents to the police, or sharing information with other branches or businesses.
Okay, so what are some effective ways to monitor and evaluate the success of an anti-harassment measures?
It's clearly going to be important to regularly evaluate its effectiveness of any steps that you put in place. And that means that you can implement any changes that might be required. And this will help you comply with the preventative duty and protect your staff from sexual harassment.
Okay, so how do you evaluate the effectiveness of the steps you've just taken?
You could do this by reviewing complaints data, which you hopefully will keep, and you can see if there's any trends or particular issues that arise. Again, perhaps a staff survey, whether that's anonymous or not, but you should include asking things like whether they have witnessed or possibly been subjected to any form of harassment. Ask whether they would or would in the future report it, and if it's a no, why not? You should also ask what steps they think you could take. It is important to seek input from workers, as well as reviewing policies, procedures, and training regularly. Remembering to take account where there may have been changes in the workplace or workforce that mean there are further steps that may now be required and that could be reasonable for you to take.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Jude. I found all that really informative and helpful.
Good. Do you have any further questions, Yolandi?
No, I think it's all fine. But what I've gained from this is that preventing sexual harassment is not just a legal obligation, but a moral one. So by taking proactive steps, engaging staff, and fostering a culture of respect, employers can create a safe and supportive environment, which will be beneficial to everyone.
Absolutely, Yolandi. Couldn't agree more. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you all for joining us today. I hope you found it informative and that you're now more familiar with the new preventative duty on sexual harassment in the workplace. I would like to add that the BPIF remains committed to supporting our members through ongoing employee relations initiatives. We will also be hosting additional podcasts and have put together an e-learning training session on this particular subject, which will be available for members to access. If you would like to have more information on that, then please don't hesitate to contact one of us or speak to your regional HR advisor.